Now, friends, we come to the seventh chapter of the book of Jeremiah. Now, I think I need to reorient ourselves in this book, and it'll make this book more meaningful to us, although it's rather mechanical. We saw that from chapters 2 through 6, that these were prophecies that Jeremiah gave during the first 5 years of his ministry, which means he probably started when he was around 20 years of age. And as a young man, he gave those prophecies. They're serious and severe prophecies, condemning his people and also pronouncing judgment. But now we come in chapter 7 through 9, and these prophecies were given after they had found the law in the temple, having cleansed it under this man Josiah. So that we've now come to that particular part, and we want to look at this particular section together today because the temple is before us. And you can well imagine the background of this, that this man Josiah, he was greatly concerned about his people, and he obviously had a wonderful and personal relationship with God. And he was a young man. And apparently he and Jeremiah were good friends. They were probably just about the same age. Now, when the temple was being cleansed, they found the book of the law. In fact, Hilkiah the priest, and Hilkiah evidently was the father of Jeremiah. And so the temple was repaired. And that, of course, was a very wonderful thing. And we find now that this man, Jeremiah, gives a prophecy to the people. He stands in the gate of the Lord's house, and this is the way this chapter 7 opens. Verse 1, the word that came to Jeremiah from the Lord, saying, stand in the gate of the Lord's house, and proclaim there this word, and say, hear the word of the Lord, all ye of Judah, that enter in at these gates to worship the Lord. Now, I should say probably that there are those that feel that this is very similar to the prophecy that we have over in the 26th chapter of Jeremiah here. And the prophecy is very similar, but if you'll notice over there, he doesn't stand as he does here in the gate, but he's in the court of Jehovah's house. He's gone on through the gate, and he gives the message there. In other words, he hadn't changed his viewpoint, and that was given later on under the reign of another king, and we'll see that when we get to it. But here we see him now giving this message. It's in the 18th year of the reign of Josiah, and that's the fifth year of the ministry of Jeremiah. And he gives this message, and the subjects of the message are first the temple and the law. And we divide this something like this. Chapter 7 through verse 3 of chapter 8, the temple is before us. And then all the way from there through chapter 10, why, we have before us the law, that is the book that they had found. And it's very important for us to see this because we see now the temple has been repaired. Book of the law has been found. And the people now in droves are returning back to the temple. It was the thing to do. And they were talking about coming back now to God. And this young man, Jeremiah, he stands there in the gate of the Lord's house. And he gives this message because as he stood there, he heard these people talking. Now, here is the thing that we need to note here, and it's very important to note. Will you notice verse 3? Now, chapter 7 of Jeremiah, thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, amend your ways and your doings, and I will cause you to dwell in this place. Now, there's something very interesting here. These people were going into the temple, and they were returning back to temple worship, but there was no change in their lives. They were living just like they did in idolatry when they were worshiping idols. It made no change in their lives at all. It was an outward revival at this particular time. Now, there came a time when it became a little bit more real than it is in this particular place. But now, it's nothing in the world but just that which is on the outward surface, and that is the thing that was taking place. Now, you will see the attitude of these people, and that was the thing that concerned this young prophet, Jeremiah. And the people were saying something like this. Verse 4 now, he says, "Trust ye not in lying words, saying, the temple of the Lord, the temple of the Lord, the temple of the Lord are these." Well, you can imagine how the people felt about all of this. While they were running around, as they would come, "My, look at the temple. Isn't it beautiful? My, didn't they do a good job in repairing it? My, isn't it nice to get back to the temple? Why, this is just like old times. Here they go." May I say to you, but there wasn't any genuine turning to God. And that's the thing that Jeremiah noticed. And he says, just don't trust these lying words that you're saying. You act as if this is the greatest thing in the world to be able to get back to the temple. But the fact of the matter is, they not only were getting back to the temple, they were also getting back to the services in the temple. And they instituted the feast. They had the Passover feast. And believe me, they went through that. And if you would go back to 2 Chronicles and read about this particular time, it'll be very helpful. I won't take time for it, but you ought to begin in chapter 34 of 2 Chronicles and read right on into the 35th chapter, and you will find in verse 18 of chapter 35, there was no Passover like to that kept in Israel from the days of Samuel the prophet, neither did all the kings of Israel keep such a Passover as Josiah kept, and the priests and the Levites and all Judah and Israel that were present, and the inhabitants of Jerusalem in the 18th year of the reign of Josiah was this Passover kept. Now, friends, actually, this was great. This was wonderful. But this man, Jeremiah, detected that they were not changing their ways. They lived just as they did before. And now he actually refers back not to the Mosaic law, the Ten Commandments, but he goes back to that which the Lord talked about in Exodus after he gave the Ten Commandments. You'll find out, and when you begin in about Exodus 20, 21, 22, 23, along there, that he began to deal with life in Israel as it was lived and as people live today. Now, listen to Jeremiah in verse 9. He says, "Will ye steal, murder, and commit adultery, and swear falsely, and burn incense unto Baal, and walk after other gods whom ye know not?" The interesting thing is, many of the people were going to the temple and talking about how wonderful it was, but they were still going out worshiping Baal, and their lives weren't changed. They were stealing, murdering, committing adultery, swearing falsely. And this man, you see, he detected this, and he's speaking to this, that unless they change their ways, that very philosophy, you see, the whole thought was this, that since the temple was repaired, and they were at least tipping their hat to God on the Sabbath day, that somehow or another, that was all that would be necessary, and that God would protect them. Now, when a people genuinely turn to God, God will protect them. But you see, they were resting on facts that were not facts. They were feeling that since they had rebuilt the temple, and you remember, they took up quite an offering for that. Many people had given to it, and they felt like everything was all right. Now, I'm sure you see that I'm going to make a application of this. May I say that I know of no book that fits into the present hour and has the message as the book of Jeremiah does for us today. Now, we came through after World War II, you remember? There was just a little wave of revival, and there were several evangelists out at that time, and the crowds came. And it was during that time that I began my Bible study. That gained quite a bit of notoriety. It's said to be the largest midweek service in America. And that went on for 21 years. But the so-called revival died out long before that. And the very interesting thing is that it was quite a surface sort of thing. And you would hear this: "Oh, my church attendance in our place has doubled and tripled, and we're putting chairs in the place. And we have had to build a new building, and we've moved out to suburbia, and we have a new church." And this one pastor that built a very wonderful church back east, my, he moved out to suburbia, and he is packing it out. 2,000 people in a city. He says, "The trouble was, when I got a new church, I didn't get any new people. I should have had some new people. The same people should have been made new, and they were not. Same old people in a new church." And they misunderstood that for spiritual growth and development. And friends, it wasn't. Now, that's what Jeremiah is saying here. Now, he says something else. In fact, it's something our Lord used in his day. Verse 11, "Is this house, which is called by my name, become a den of robbers in your eyes?" In that day, these people were spending the week robbing their brethren, and it didn't change their business habits. It didn't change their lives. There was gross immorality. And the thing today is that people feel like if we have these great religious splurges and we have conventions, and I recognize I'm not an organizational man, never was. I'm not a joiner. A dear little country woman came to me down in Texas one day. She says, "Are you a joiner?" And I didn't know then what she meant. She said, "Do you join all these organizations that come along?" And I said, "No, I'm not a joiner, and I'm not one. And I'm not convention-minded. I don't care to go to conventions. Some people love them." May I say to you, a great many people misunderstand that for a moving of the Spirit of God today. And I want to say, friends, and I'd probably be as unpopular as Jeremiah was, this is not revival, that type of thing at all, unless it transforms your life. You see, the Wesley movement just about put the liquor industry out of business in England. And it moved into the factories, and the child labor laws were enacted. I want to see a spiritual movement today that's going to reach in the ghetto. And my friend, when government reaches into the ghetto as they have today and in other places, there's been nothing in the world but crookedness, and things have gone wrong. We need revival. And revival will change things like that, and it's the only thing it is. Now, that's what Jeremiah's talking about. That's his message. And you can see how popular that young man was when he stood yonder in the gate of the temple. And I can see him there, lonely fella, heartbroken at the message he's given, but he's given it. And it did bring a partial revival. Verse 16, "Therefore," he says, "pray not thou for this people, neither lift up crying or prayer for them, neither make intercession to me, for I'll not hear thee." God says you don't need to pray for these people until they turn. And I believe that today that there are times when you don't need to pray for folks. I went into a hospital to visit a member, and I prayed for a man across the way. He said to me, "Will you pray for me?" Well, I said, "I don't know. Are you a Christian?" "Well," he says, "I believe in God." Well, I said, "That doesn't make you a Christian." I says, "It's to trust Jesus Christ," and I gave him the gospel, and he would not accept it. Now, I said, "Brother, I want to pray for you, but not like you want me to. You want me to pray that you get well and that you be blessed. I'm going to pray that you get saved. That's the only prayer I can pray for you." We are praying today for too many people to be blessed that ought to be prayed for to get saved. Now, that's the thing that God is saying to Jeremiah. Don't stand there in the temple there and pray for these people. If you're going to pray, pray that come to God, and you're giving them my message. That's the important thing. Say, this gets right down to the nitty-gritty, doesn't it? This is where the rubber meets the road, and this is where the shoes hit the sidewalk, too, by the way. It's not what you do on Sunday today, friends. It's what you do on Monday. I'm not interested in the man that goes to church on Sunday. I want to see him go to work on Monday. That's the place to judge whether he's genuine or not. Verse 23, but this thing commanded I them, saying, obey my voice, and I'll be your God. You shall be my people and walk in all the ways that I've commanded you, that it may be well with you. In other words, he says, I want you to obey me. This business of coming into the temple, it's great. It's wonderful. But when your lives contradict it, and someone has said that some people go to church to eye the clothes and others to close their eyes. And I'm not sure of what that's true in a great many cases today. Not really to worship God. Their lives have not been changed. They still gossip. They still crucify other Christians to their back. Don't mind putting a knife in their back. They still are out yonder in the world. It's very questionable. These people, see, were going right on to the altar of Baal, living the same way. They had no testimony. It's not the testimony you give in church. It's the testimony you give out yonder in the world that counts, friends. Oh, my, this is personal, is it not? Now he says here, verse 26, yet they hearken not unto me, nor incline their ear, but harden their neck. They did worse than their fathers. Therefore thou shalt speak all these words unto them, but they will not hearken to thee. Thou shalt also call unto them, but they will not answer thee. And Jeremiah didn't have many hands put up in his services. And he didn't have very many people that came forward. He didn't have any. But my friend, God says, you've done the job. You're to give my word. And the important thing is for you and me is not to be able to count noses today, our heads, but the important thing is, can we give a report to God that we have given his word and that we tried to back it up? Now, he says this is the generation of his wrath, verse 29.